this morning, we're going to hear from some Louisianans impacted by the historic flooding of the last week. Blair, who you'll hear from first, Baton Rouge. The next person we're going to hear from is Brene Brough. He lives and works in Holden and Livingston Parish on the Tickfaw River. And the last person we're going to hear from is Logan. Logan is living in Baton Rouge. The thousands of Baton Rouge and Louisianan residents who have been impacted by these historic floods.
Shenandoah, I long to hear you. I look away, rolling river. Oh, Shenandoah, long to see you. We were bound away across the wide Missouri. The chief disdained the traitor's dollars.
Hi, honey. How are you? We're at cooking dinner with some of our friends, and it's nice to not be in Louisiana right now. All of the rain took place on Thursday, Friday, and then Saturday morning. And I think if my memory serves me correct, the rain had pretty much subsided by Saturday afternoon. But we knew that other parts, like Bass Pro, so I live off of Millerville and Old Hammond, just a neighborhood towards O'Neill off of that intersection. And our neighborhood has never flooded before, of course. So we weren't even thinking anything about that. We've gone to the grocery store, kind of like hurricane preparation, just get a bunch of stuff in case we can't get out on the roads, but never ever thinking our house is going to be a part of that. So Saturday night, we went to sleep, put our baby to bed, and, you know, like normal. At 1:30 in the morning, we get our doorbell rings. And my dog starts barking. And of course, like waking up out of that stupor, you're just kind of dazed. And I didn't understand what was going on or even think about the flooding at all. They answered my door and it was my neighbors next door. And they told us that, so at one end of my street is Florida Boulevard. And then at the other end of my street is Old Hammond. And if you are looking towards Florida Boulevard, you could see the water like coming. And it was almost like, you know, a stream or something just kind of coming towards us. And even at that point, like, my mind wasn't wrapping around what was happening. I just knew that I needed to get my baby out of the house and as quickly as possible. So we have a large record collection. And our first thought was like, well, we'll probably get a little bit. I'm thinking like maybe a few inches of water in our house. So we just wanted to get, we unplugged all the electrical stuff, of course, and we put all of our records on the bed, thinking we'd be safe. We grabbed my kids' favorite toys, thinking we're just going down the street. My parents live less than a mile and a half down the road from us. And we were just going to go sleep at their house until we waited it out and see, you know, what was going on. And so we leave, we get in my car and we leave to go to my parents' house. My sister actually lives across the street from us. And she also has a toddler. So we call them, we get them, we all, you know, get together and we're going to head to my parents' house. Well, we get to the end of the road and we see that the road is flooded. But it's dark, so we can't really see how deep it is. And we go, and there are firefighters that are unloading the nursing home, which is across the street from us. The firefighter informs us, basically, they have no training. They don't know the area at all, and they had no advice for us. Basically, just told us to get lost. We tried to go the other way. We were blocked in. We could see that the water was coming from Florida, so we knew that wasn't an option either. So at this point, I'm kind of panicking because I know there's not really anything we can do. All of this takes place within 20 minutes of us being woken up. By this point, we turn around to go back down our street. There are already cars stalled out in front of my house, and there's water at my door at this point. So within half an hour, there's already water at my door. then, of course, we can't go back to the house because we see that there is actually water coming in. So we turn back around, and fortunately, there is a elementary school at the end of our street. And we can see that some of our neighbors from down the way have kind of started to gather there. So that's what we did, too. We parked our cars. We went and got our other car and parked it there as well. And we just kind of waited because we could see that there were officials about. So we figured we would be given instruction at a certain point. And we just waited there. And we ended up waiting there from 2 o'clock until basically 2 o'clock the next day, or that afternoon, rather, waiting for someone to come and get us. And then someone eventually, the National Guard came. Well, my dad actually found some National Guardsmen who were not, didn't have any orders, and basically begged them to come and pick us up, in which case they did. They came and got us and brought us to, well, not my parents' house, but enough that we could walk there to their house at that point. It was amazing. It really was very heroic. There were several things going through my mind through all this. As a citizen of Louisiana, and I was actually living in Houston whenever Katrina happened, and seeing all of those images and seeing the way that women and their children were treated in the Superdome and all these other things, I was very, very panicked about going to any sort of shelter. So we kind of passed up different opportunities to go to shelters at different parts of the day because I kept being optimistic that we would get to my parents' house, which I felt safer at than just going somewhere across town without any access to any resources at all, because I didn't know what the shelters were going to be like. And with my 6-month-old and my 18-month-old nephew, and we were literally, I was kind of at my wit's end. I didn't know what else to do. And I heard that they were bringing people to the Celtic Studios, which is right by my office. So I was like, okay, well, at least that way, if we get there and if something's bad or, you know, we at least have somewhere we can escape to that's just a short walk, we can go walk to my office. So we were actually like about to jump up on the big army vehicle to go to the studio when my dad, I see him running across the water, like the great hero that he is. It was very cute. I hear my sister, she says, "Look, it's Papa." And we all just start running towards him. So thanks to those National Guardsmen that the Coast Guard that came and got us for sure. So let's see, the next day, so that all happened Sunday. On Monday, we got word, because at this point, like, we had left our cars at the school at the end of the street, and the water was kind of creeping on us at the school. It was never, it was still like a little ways down the street, so it never like made it to us, but that was the worry. Like, we weren't sure if it was gonna come to the school lot or not. And so we weren't sure if our cars were okay, but we had gotten word from somebody else in the neighborhood that they had opened up the streets and we were able to get back there. So that was on Monday. We were able to go get our cars. And at that point, Monday night, we were able to get in my house, and there was still like, kind of puddles of water on the ground, but most of the water had receded out of the house. And then bright and early on Tuesday, we got in there and had to throw everything out. And on Wednesday, we tore out all the walls. And so now, we got it. We were able to get everything out. We wanted to do it as soon as possible so, it didn't get worse than it had to be. We were very fortunate to have my brother and nephew and niece come, and then several of our wonderful friends came and gave us their sweat and love to help us strip out the house. It's an emotional thing to kind of have to carelessly throw everything you've ever had or loved away. So to have friends help you do that, I'm definitely grateful for that. There was no more standing water where we were, so we just kind of, there were several. Actually, like later that evening, you could look down our street and just see everyone's stuff. We were definitely not one of, we were maybe one of the first ones, but we were definitely not the only ones. Whole Foods, which is where Yusuf works, was very gracious to give him pretty much as much time off as he needed. But at some point we have to make money because we gotta rebuild everything. So we both go back to work full time on Monday. And so we'll just basically be living with my parents until we can, get FEMA money to fix our house. We do, the owners of our house, we're renters, so the owners of our house do have flood insurance. So I think that of course not the contents of the house, but I do think that the structure of the house itself and all of our appliances are covered. So we're good with that. It's just a matter of, getting everything, but everyone's given us so much already. It's really overwhelming by how wonderful people have been. I can't even express how much love we've received, really. How lucky we feel. It's a little taxing. I'm very much, you've been to my house. I'm very much a homebody. I'm my space and all, I don't know. I'm very particular about my things and my space. So it's definitely going to take some adjusting, but in times like this, I'm just lucky to have a good bed and my baby has a crib to sleep in. That's all I could ask for. So it'll be, and my parents do have, a pretty decent sized house. So we each have our own rooms. We are sharing a room with our baby, which isn't a big deal. It'll be okay. I hope out of this, there's some realizations about the way that city development has been happening. I hope it also opens up some people's eyes about the realness of climate change. There's a lot of things. I hope that it makes people more informed. I hope overall it makes the state of Louisiana better prepared for emergencies like this, because the true miracle of all of this is the actual grassroots organizing that has happened through all of this. I got more information from Facebook groups. That's where we were getting all of our information. While we did have coverage, of course, at 4 a.m. or 5 a.m, at that point, everyone's cell phones went down. And we were outside of a school, so we could connect to their Wi-Fi. But like most schools, they had all the social media sites blocked. so we weren't able to get to Facebook, which was really a pain, but I get it. I was communicating with Logan, for instance, through email. So we were able to make iMessage text messages or whatever, which was nice because we could at least contact people, but we weren't able to use Facebook. But outside of that, Facebook has been a really great tool, for getting people rescued and just seeing, seeing lines down the interstate of just 20s and 30s of trucks with boats just ready to pull people, just do whatever they can. And that's really more than I could say for the state of Louisiana. More people helping people than it was any government officials helping people. That's for sure. At least in mass, people definitely stepped up, and it was really just amazing to see everybody helping everyone. And yeah. Okay. All right. Bye.
Thank you for listening. This is WTUL News and Views. The next person we're going to hear from is Brene Brough. He lives and works in Holden and Livingston Parish on the Tickfa River.
I can't believe this, you don't want to see.
Hello? Hey, how are you doing? Yeah. So my property is in Holden. It's off the Tickfa River. So the Tickfa River, I guess the water rises up pretty regularly, but it, normally gets 18 foot higher than, I say normally, probably once a year, once every 2 years or something, gets up to, maybe more frequently than that, but gets up to 18 foot high, which the way my land is set up is, so the highway is right there, and I'm basically, a couple inches lower than the highway. I'm not that much lower than the highway. About a full acre that's about even with the highway, a little bit lower. And then after that, it drops off the kind of those rolling hills down to the river in the back. So when the river comes up, it'll pretty regularly go up to that raised part, but not onto the raised part. That always stays dry. And actually, from what my neighbors tell me, because I've only been there for a year and a half, is that when the water comes up, since they've been there, which they've been there for, 17 years, something like that, the water had come up to the high part, but never been on the high part since they lived there. I guess in 1983 was the last high flood, and it was, I think, 20 and a half feet higher than the river was what the Dave said in Holden. And then this one had got up to, I want to say, 22 and a half feet high. So 2 feet higher than it's ever been in recorded history there. But in March, it came up, and it was probably a foot and a half, 2 feet deep of water over the flat part. In March, the water didn't even get into the camper. It came up to the camper, but it didn't get inside of it. So I didn't even have, I had my car. When it came up in March, I had left my car there and left the keys with the neighbor so he could move it higher if it needed to be. And then I had taken the bus and drove it off. So he ended up having to move it out of my yard into his driveway, I guess, is a little raised. So he moved it there, and it was out of the water. I had, a bunch of pieces of pallets and pieces of wood and this kind of stuff in my yard that washed off, but then other people's wood washed into my yard. So I guess it was a surprise trade of lumber and stuff like that. This time it was probably 4 feet of water. I had a car that was totally underwater. It got probably a foot high in the camper, and significantly worse than it was in March. But also in March, that was, about as slightly less than it had been in 1983. But they haven't seen that since 83. So, really unusual that both of those happened so quickly in succession. Monday was the first day I could get back. I don't remember if it started raining Thursday or Friday. I guess it had been raining for a couple of days. So on Friday, the water was coming up and all. I actually was at work. I think I stayed at my little brother's house the night before or something like that. So I went to work, and then on my lunch break, I was trying to go back to my house just to pick up some stuff I had laying around the yard or whatever, and just put them a little bit out of the way for that. And so on my way back, there was already water over some of the roads, so I had to go around a much longer way, I guess, than I would normally go. I actually was, the deepest water that I drove through the whole time was before the flooding happened, trying to go back to my house on that lunch break. So I don't know how deep it was, but I was driving my truck through, and I guess the water got about halfway up, and I was like, I'm not going to keep driving through this. And so it just reversed out of it and went around a different way. Went to my house, it was raining and everything, picked up a couple things and just put them higher up, and didn't even think about moving stuff that was inside any of my buses or anything, because it's never gotten that high before, I guess. Went to Baton Rouge, got stuck there because the interstate closed and all that. And on Sunday, I think I tried to go back, or maybe Saturday I tried to go back. I don't remember, but I couldn't because all the roads were closed. Monday we went back and checked, me and Harlow, and Chelsea really didn't want us to go, but did anyway, I guess. And it was fine. All the water was off the roads and everything for going up 55 and all. Got to check my house out. The water was, in one of the buses, it was about 2 inches of water above the floor line. And another one, it was 6 to 8 inches. And then my camper, it was about a foot of water. So I had one car and one motorcycle that were totally underwater. For that, and then a couple instruments that got wet, and an amp that got wet, and the whole thing about mold and whatnot to deal with. As far as that goes, I guess pretty lucky that I hadn't built a house there, because that would have been a mess. Went back to my house on Tuesday, cleaned some stuff up, got a dehumidifier, started running that in the buses and everything. And then went back to work on Wednesday. And I feel pretty lucky with, which I guess, yeah, like I said, if I had put a house out there instead of just living in buses, I would be probably having a lot of work to do right now. But I guess I got lucky on not doing that. So, like, for all the folks that got, you know, and then, like, driving through trying to get to my property when all the roads were closed, there's a bunch of houses that I was seeing that were, you know, water up to the tops of the windows and stuff on the first floor, which that's a mess. That's, you know, that whole house has to get redone. And, you know, that's a lot of work. But driving out, there's as many flatboats with mud motors on them as cars on the street. So, you know, people out there helping do whatever needs to get done. So that's pretty neat to see, pretty good.
It's been very interesting here in Baton Rouge. The transition from crisis to response was interesting because it happened in a piecemeal fashion. Within the city of Baton Rouge and the outlying communities, there were the areas that were flooded and inundated first with the rain. And then after the rain stopped and the water began to recede and move in a southern direction, other communities actually experienced flooding after the initial flood event. And so while some people were pivoting and transitioning into, the water's gone, let's pick up the pieces mode, other people were just beginning to experience that devastation. It's also very strange because there are parts of Baton Rouge and the outlying communities that were less completely untouched, such as the neighborhood that I live in, while other parts of this flood, you know, the flood-affected area were completely and totally devastated. I have several friends who lost everything in the flooding, who lived not, but maybe 2 miles from other friends who were completely safe and unharmed. So we've really seen an effort to organize people, which has been very successful. One thing I've noticed is that, and you'll see this in the national media as well, the Cajun Navy and the civilians here in Baton Rouge and the surrounding communities were certainly the first responders in this disaster, and that has continued to be the case. I have never before seen my Facebook news feed so full of people who are using social media to coordinate relief efforts, and it's extending, you know, it's happened today, and I imagine will keep happening in the future. People are putting out calls for assistance in gutting houses, tearing out drywall. Other people who are available to volunteer are putting their availability out into social media, and people are really connecting in that way, which is pretty astounding and fantastic. In the first days of the flooding, there were many people who were out helping. You know, the Cajun Navy was rescuing people. But things were very chaotic. AT&T lost cell service. Communications were very difficult. And what we've seen now, and what I hope we continue to see, is this extremely organized, coherent effort to direct aid to where it is needed most. And that also includes donations. Now, when organizations and individuals are calling out for donations, they're requesting specific items, the things that people need the most. Like, we have a better assessment of what the need of the displaced people are. There are some local relief organizations that the Baton Rouge Area Foundation has set up a flood relief fund. There's a couple other local groups. The Baton Rouge Food Bank, which was devastated by the flooding, has already turned around and, you know, worked on gutting their facility. And in the midst of moving their facility, they're still working to provide food for displaced people in Baton Rouge. Happily, self-care has been a topic of discussion amongst all of the the disaster victims and the disaster relief workers that I know. You know, everyone is looking out for each other, making sure that we stay hydrated while we're outside working, you know, doing demolition and hauling out trash and things like that. Everyone is making sure that, you know, one another has eaten, that we're fed, and even taking time out, you know, to go down to the local bar and have a drink with one's friends after a long day of work and recovery efforts. And there are countless videos of disaster people whose houses were flooded in the storm barbecuing with their neighbors and smiling and enjoying life and doing their best to just take a little moment to have a little self-care. Some of the most compelling images that I have seen throughout all of this are people who were either playing their instruments for the last time in their house that was filling with water, or just today, in the middle of hauling garbage out of houses onto the street, someone sat down to play their piano for the neighbors and for themselves. Those little human things that I think are really important to maintaining dignity and humanity in a situation like this.
Thank you for listening. This is WTUL News and Views. Logan is living in Baton Rouge near LSU. He's very thankful that when he arrived on Saturday night, after being away for 7 weeks for a study abroad program, that his home was relatively dry. There wasn't flooding, but he immediately set to task helping the thousands of Baton Rouge and Louisiana residents from the historic floods.
I just returned to Baton Rouge from Canada Saturday afternoon. I flew into New Orleans, and my friend picked me up from the airport. And in order to return to Baton Rouge, we had to divert from the interstate and take back roads into the city. I returned straight home to my house, you know, to check it out, and my possessions and everything were spared. I had some leaks in my roof due to the hard rain. It's strange. I expected to return to some sense of normalcy in my hometown after being gone for a significant period of time. But given all of the events of this summer, the murder of Alton Sterling, the murder of the police officers, and now the flood, I don't know that I return to the same community. I don't know that Baton Rouge will ever be the same. And the question is now, in which direction are we, as the members of the community, going to bring the city in light of all of this? I think we are at a crossroads where we can really do the difficult and important work of becoming one community instead of two, as it has been here for a very long time. Or we can allow the status quo to reassert itself in a way that I fear will be more entrenched than it was before. I think it's important that we remember that, you know, the very real issues of inequality and systemic racism that were present in Baton Rouge beforehand are still here. And that, you know, we can't allow this natural disaster to divert us from paying attention to those issues and working through them and continuing to advocate on behalf of marginalized people. For the immediate future, my hope, and fortunately, this is something that I have been seeing in social media and with people that I know, is that people from South Baton Rouge go into North Baton Rouge. South Baton Rouge being the historically white part of town and North Baton Rouge being the historically underserved and black part of town. What I hope to see is that people from South Baton Rouge participate in the rebuilding effort of North Baton Rouge, and actually invest time and money and effort into the restoration of that community. And in doing so, build bridges and forge bonds and bring these two communities that have been so long divided, bring them together. And if we can continue that work into the coming months, into the coming years, if we can bring back healthcare and a hospital to North Baton Rouge if we can support Black-owned businesses, I think that this disaster presents an opportunity to begin that work. And I hope that that's the direction that we take it in Baton Rouge. It's been very heartening to see so many people coming together in Baton Rouge, given the events of the summer. And at the same time, at the shelter, there were so many people who had lost everything, who were looking out for one another. I mean, there were displaced people in the shelter who were comforting and taking care of one another. There were so many people who were coming to the shelter to drop off donations. It, in fact, and this happened all over Baton Rouge, at the Celtic Media Center, which was a large film production facility in Baton Rouge that was turned into a shelter Saturday evening or Sunday morning, they eventually had to turn away donations because so many people were bringing so many things that their ability to sort and distribute these donations was overwhelmed. So we've really seen a massive outpouring of support from the community. And as I said before, random strangers are hooking up on Facebook right now to go out into neighborhoods and communities that were affected by flooding to assist with, you know, tearing out drywall and, you know, tearing up floorboards and doing mold remediation. It has been an astounding display of community coming together. Okay. All right. Well, I gotta run. Yeah, I love you too. I'll see you soon.
Concludes our segment on the historic Louisiana floods. Many thanks to Blair, Brene, and Logan for sharing their stories with WTUL News and Views. Song credits are On Shenandoah by Trampled by Turtles and Radio Silence by James Blake. Thank you for listening.
I can't believe this, you don't want to see. Lift in love with each other so